no woman running for governor of Kentucky will ever again have to answer the question, can a woman do this job?
Kentucky women have faced that question since the late 18th century. There's no way to mention all of their names, but only tell some of their stories. Stories of women who made and are making history.
We benefit every day from what they did and what they do.
Martha Lane Collins, Kentucky's first and only woman governor, one of about 40 women who's featured in this documentary, Dreamers and Doers, Voices of Kentucky Women. And it's inspired by the women in the Commonwealth who boldly opened doors in politics, science, education, entertainment, literature, athletics, religion, and the military. Joining us to talk about the film and the achievements of the women portrayed in the documentary are Eleanor Jordan, Executive Director of the Kentucky Commission on Women, Dr. Andrea Watkins, Associate Professor of History at Northern Kentucky University, and filmmaker Michael Breeding, who produced Dreamers and Doers. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Eleanor, how did Dreamers and Doers come to be?
It was a long process. First of all, let me thank you for allowing us time on the show to talk about this wonderful project, which has just come to fruition, and I'm very, very proud of it. I think, you know, the commission has always been concerned about an exhibit that we have called the Kentucky Women Remembered Exhibit, which is 69 watercolor portraits of women who people in the Commonwealth have felt have made a huge difference. And we've always had in the back of our minds, we were a little antsy about the permanency of this exhibit because it, you know, 10 years from now, a new administration can come in and say, oh, let's take those women down and put horses up in the hallway. So there's our exhibit in a closet somewhere, and so many children come through that hallway, and they get a glimpse of these women, and they don't really get all of the information that's there to be gleaned from that wall in the West Wing. And one of our commission members, Linda Roach, who is a good friend of Michael Breeding, mentioned it to him. Why don't we make a film? We had a meeting, and the rest is history. We, of course, didn't know how we were going to pay for this. And we went to Toyota. We had many donors, but Toyota stepped up to the plate and said, we get it. We understand why this is important and why it needs to be made. And they made it possible. So now we have a tool that we can put in every middle school, every high school, every library. It'll be on DVD. And we have this wealth of history, this repository of women's history that will be available and accessible to anyone.
Michael, that had to be exciting for you to take part in producing this documentary, to creating this.
Absolutely. Every project is exciting, and every project is my favorite, the one that I'm currently working on. So this was monumental, though. If you can imagine, we expanded the original list. She spoke of the 69, you know, from the exhibit in Frankfurt. We expanded that to even add 20 more. So we had to figure out how to tell this marvelous, exciting story in an hour and do an adequate job, a good job, and not have just typically a laundry list, but tell marvelous stories. And it was a challenge, but I from the response from the public, I think we did it.
How much work and research did go into making this?
How much work and research?
Lots, right?
Well, Eleanor knows best. The process started with maybe two researchers, three researchers, and then there are three writers on the project. And we, in some ways, the film itself had a voice and started to tell itself. And that, with a little vision and a lot of hard work, we were able to begin to sculpt something that would have life.
Eleanor, you were laughing about the idea of how much work went into it. So it was a lot, wasn't it?
Well, Michael and I spent so much time on this, on the research. We wanted to, you know, get it right. And that's part of the reason why we made the film, because when you're researching women, because they are women, oftentimes you find a little bit about that person, and then what's recorded about them will be more about the woman's husband or the father or the uncle. And there, you know, our history just has not been recorded the same as men's history. So we had a starting point as far as the exhibit, the information that we had, that we used to choose what portraits to unveil every year in the Kentucky Women Remembered exhibit. And we had a lot of people around the state who have done this research. So we did have some. But having to dig a little bit deeper was many nights and weekends, I'll say.
I get up and, early. Eleanor.
And Michael brought a marvelous team to do most of that research. And we really appreciate it, because this is a, it's so important that kids grow up knowing this information rather than stumbling on it by accident.
Andrea, one of the things that really made an impression on me as I watched this was just how many women have made such a significant contribution into Kentucky's history and into the national history as well. And I guess it's just a story that doesn't get out there as much as it should.
Exactly. That's what I've seen. When I teach Kentucky history at the university, at Northern Kentucky University, I find that a lot of times students come into the class and Kentucky is horses and hillbillies, and they don't realize that we really have a very rich past in both women's history and African American history. I know students are always shocked at how many wonderful African American women there are in Kentucky's history and the great strides they've made in civil rights and in politics. And like Georgia Davis Powers, and she's prominent in the documentary, but also women going back to Mary Breckinridge in Frontier Nursing Service that really is on the forefront of so many important issues, from politics to health to women's rights, voting rights and such. And Kentucky is right there in the center of it, both for our state, but also for our nation. And I think that when people find out about this, and my students and others, it gives you a sense of pride in Kentucky. And you don't realize we're not just all hillbillies and we're not all Kentucky Derby, that there is a larger picture there, that we have something else that we can be proud of and to talk about.
Yeah. One person, Helen Thomas, I've always liked her as a journalist, and I didn't realize that she was from Kentucky until right. I saw this documentary. It really opened my eyes. Oh,
Winchester.
Yes, Winchester, Kentucky. Had quite a career as a White House correspondent through all those years.
Well, and the interesting thing is, as you might expect, that little section was very short. Can you imagine what we really could do with that section, with the Helen Thomas segment? It could have been a film in and of itself.
Exactly.
Yeah, that means
most of these subjects. You know, Michael, I think we said that time and again, that that's why it's so hard to edit some of this information, because some of them have led such rich lives and has contributed so much to the landscape of the Commonwealth. It's hard to pull out what would be most significant, because there's so many significant things. But, you know, one of the things we promise people when they watch this film for the first time, they are going to walk away saying, I didn't know that. At some point during the film, they're going to say, I didn't know that. And I think that's what's so extraordinary about these stories.
Oh, that's exactly the reaction I had, Eleanor, was I didn't know that. Little thing, but I didn't know it. And you're right. Her part in the whole documentary wasn't all that long, but it still made quite an impression on me. And then somebody else who I found fascinating was Victoria Merton McClure, who was the first American to row solo across the Atlantic Ocean. I didn't know she was from Kentucky.
Yeah, she lives in Louisville. She is now the president of Catherine Spaulding University. And there she is, a living, breathing hero, walking amongst us, you know.
And I take it that's one of the messages, Michael, that you wanted people to take away from this, right? That these women are quite accomplished and they're living, breathing heroes, as Eleanor put it.
That's right. But we also didn't want to take anything for granted, and because we knew, and actually we made it as our target audience, beyond the typical Kentuckian, the KET audience, which we need to talk about as well. We wanted to target it to those eighth graders and to those fourth graders in Kentucky. So we wanted to give them a strong foundation of the women's movement in Kentucky to show folks just how far they have come. And many of the comments from girls around 16 and 17 and 18 at our premieres would say, you know, I have so much to be thankful for the women who came before me.
And Andrea, something else that struck me too when I was watching this was the role that women played in settling Kentucky. It was a pretty big role, wasn't it?
Yes, very much so. They were there, as Eleanor was saying earlier, it's hard to find a lot about those early women because so many of the records are done by men. And so they focus on those aspects that were important to them. But they're there, no doubt about it. Rebecca Boone, Jemima Boone, the Callaway sisters are all there at the very beginning. And they're instrumental in the survival of the pioneers here in Kentucky and keeping those settlements alive. And they took part in every aspect of those lives. And even black women, we know Daniel Boone, when he was cutting the Wilderness Road, the only two women with him and about 30 other men were his daughter and a black slave woman. So they've been here from the very beginning, no doubt about it, and have been instrumental in Kentucky's history.
Well, are there any key points in Kentucky history, key points as far as how they affected women that stand out in your mind, Andrea?
Well, I think that one of the most important is the one covered in the film at the end, towards the end of the 19th century with the changes in women's property rights. In my own research, I focus on the antebellum period, and I have studied a famous court case with a woman who, when she married for the second time, she was a very rich widow, had over $100,000. Her name is Mary Owen Russell. She married Robert Wickliffe. And she signed over all of her father's land to her husband in exchange for the right to own and free seven of her slaves. That's all she wanted to do, which she did, and she sent them to Liberia as free people at that point. And it led to a huge court case when her family, who were the Todds, the famous Todd family, sued Wickliffe because it said he extorted her property from her for this right to free the slaves. And so it just shows how women, their rights were very precarious in that time. And she came in, a very rich woman, and gave all of that up. So when that change in property law was made where women could have deeds and such and could will their own land and keep hold of it even after their marriage, I think that's a very significant point for Kentucky women's history.
Michael, was there one woman whose story was the biggest surprise to you while you were doing this film?
Well, you must know that I really knew the names of some of these women. And I had walked through the exhibit, but it's another thing to really read about them and learn about them to the point where they have taken on a life of their own. Dolores Dillahanty, who spoke in the film, I was just so impressed by her passion and her knowledge. Now, Eleanor probably can answer that better than I, because she's lived with some of these women for a very long time.
Eleanor?
I think, first let me go back. I'll answer your question, but I want to go back to one of the things that a point that we really wanted to make in the film, and that was to start the film after, of course, Governor Collins makes her opening remark, was to talk about Native American women and their contribution, how they were caretakers of the earth and the respect that they had for the environment. So that's a point that we wanted to make, although we really didn't have a lot of information, a lot of people people's lives to chronicle. But we did want to make that point. But I think one of the aha moments for me, not necessarily in making the film, but when I first learned about this, was Willa Beatrice Brown, the aviatrix, who actually was the first ground instructor for the men that went on to become the Tuskegee Airmen. I've seen, you know, two or three Tuskegee Airmen movies, but never has anyone mentioned that there was a woman remotely involved in that whole mix, other than Eleanor Roosevelt and Mary McLeod Bethune. So when I first heard the story of Willa Beatrice Brown, I was blown away, and that she was right here from Kentucky in Glasgow. I was just really, really floored by that story and why up to that point I had not heard about her. Go ahead.
Well, what struck me along the way in studying and crafting the film is what motivated these women to do something, to make a difference. And each of them did it at different points in their lives, but more specifically, some of them really didn't have any special training for doing amazing things. Georgia Davis Powers is sitting on her sofa and decides to get up and go register and to become a senator. You know, May Street Kid, after a wonderful career in insurance, decides to run for office and make a difference. Mary Breckinridge in her 60s, you know, suddenly decides to go change the world through healthcare. That's what struck me about some of these women. At what point does someone say, I'm tired, I'm ready to make a change, I'm ready to do something wonderful?
Eleanor, Michael, whoever wants to handle this, tell me about the event on Wednesday. Dreamers and Doers is going to make its Northern Kentucky premiere.
That's exactly right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, did you direct that to Michael?
Go ahead. Eleanor.
Oh, either one of you. Oh,
well, actually, Michael probably knows a little more about it. We have sponsored 4 premieres, and Michael received an email that a group wanted to do this in Northern Kentucky. And, of course, we are only going to have maybe a couple of commissioners that will be able to come to that. Madeline, our chair, Madeline Abramson, is not able to come. I'm trying to juggle my schedule so I can be there, and I'm still not sure yet. But we want the show to go on because we were not able to have a premiere in Northern Kentucky, so this is great that we're going to have an audience in Northern Kentucky to not only view the film but discuss it afterwards. And Dr. Watkins, are you part of that panel to discuss the film?
Yes, I'll be there.
Oh, great.
And after the film, I'll be speaking with Governor Collins, who'll be in attendance, and we'll talk to her on her reflections on the film, but also on her time in office and the part that she's played in Kentucky women's history.
I would also like to add that NKU had a tremendous impact on the making of the film, as they provided the auditorium, the wonderful digitorium, for us to film Governor Collins before a mock audience. I'm not sure you knew that, but all of that was a mock audience.
Really?
All of that was just planned ever so perfectly.
It came off very well. And Michael, the showing's going to be Wednesday, May the 6th, right?
That's right.
5:30 at Northern Kentucky University. And you can find links to more information at WVXU.org. Eleanor, Andrea and Michael, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Eleanor Jordan is Executive Director of the Kentucky Commission on Women. Dr. Andrea Watkins is Associate Professor of History at Northern Kentucky University. And Michael Breeding, the filmmaker who produced Dreamers and Doers.